Hi, I'm Paul, and this is Heart of Glenanus, a program about the cultural and service organisations around your town and in the region. Today I'm at the corner of Ferguson Street and West Ave, and I'm visiting the Land of the Bearders History House Museum. And I'm going to be talking to Eve Chappell, the research coordinator. Hi, Eve.
Hi, how are you, Paul?
Very good. Well, that was an amazing bell sound. Can you tell me a bit about it?
Well, that bell came from the Wellingrove Church, and Wellingrove was the town before Gleninnis was formed. Mm-hmm. Paul Hill owned a property called Wellingrove, and he had some pull with the government. He asked them that be the centre of the area, the first town, and they built the courthouse there and they had school and so on.
When did Wellingrove go down and Gleninnis come up?
It started to disappear because it wasn't on what was called the Great North Road, which is now the New England Highway.
Yes.
So it was, the Gleninnis by 1872 was declared a municipality.
Okay.
So it was a matter of communications and transport.
The museum is in the buildings of the old Gleninnis Hospital, so today's program will focus on hospital-themed displays. Let's have a walk around and see what we can see. I love the courtyard here.
And now we're in this pavilion.
Yes.
1877, it was built as a 6-bed men's ward. And we go here onto what was the veranda. At one stage, it was an open veranda for the men's ward. This was the hospital kitchen.
For the whole hospital?
For the whole hospital.
Ah, yes.
And they would have had about 80 or 90 patients. And this is a triple arga stove. Huge stove that had wood powered argas.
So with three fireboxes?
With three fireboxes. But we've got in here the types of things that they would have had with the fountain. And then there's the old hospital trolley where the food used to come into the wards, heated up.
And what's that cylindrical cabinet? What is that?
That is called a Lazy Susan.
Remember we had little
Lazy Susans?
Just a flat one, yes.
And that was your original pantry. You'll see there are big portions for potatoes and rice and things like that. A little smaller for flour, a little smaller for dried apricots, and then you've got small little containers for herbs, spices, bicarb soda.
And were they common? Is that a commercial kitchen thing or
a domestic thing? No, that's a domestic thing. That's what you had as a pantry.
Well, this is an impressive display. You really get a sense of an operating theatre. I guess that's because it's the original operating theatre.
It is.
That lamp is very impressive.
It's the real thing. Yeah.
What is that? That's 3 feet across, at least.
At least, and then we have the operating table. And these, the people who've nursed before come in and have a wonderful time here.
We have
these pull-out drawers of all the old instruments.
Beautiful.
And this is called the Jeannie Ross Fraser Memorial Medical Wing. Jeannie's mother was the first trainee from the hospital here in the early 1900s.
Okay.
And she was a nurse herself.
And was that part of the research that you did, or was that well known?
Oh, that was well known, and Jeannie was a member here for many years before she died.
Okay. Yep. And is this an iron lung?
This is an iron lung.
You could almost put that in your mystery box, couldn't you?
Just
really?
About. Lord Nuffield gave these to the hospitals.
Lord Nuffield had something to do with car manufacture, didn't he?
Yeah. And these are mainly used for polio.
Oh, I've never seen one of those. That's an infant respirator.
That's an infant respirator. It works as a vacuum.
Okay, to help the lungs.
Yes, to help the lungs. And that's when they used to boil up the instruments and use them again.
Yes, very good. I think this is very impressive. So this has always been an operating theatre?
Yes.
With a very big south-facing window for good light, I guess.
Good light.
And this is a history wall of the matrons and the head nurses,
yes,
is it?
Yes, well, this was Jeannie.
Yes, who you mentioned before.
And she worked here, and that was her mother, trainee here.
Yeah.
And then that was Matron Beatrice Cromlin, a very, very well-known matron. And then we've got the history of the actual hospital, 1877.
And did someone get an award?
Yes.
So Beatrice Cromlin.
That was Beatrice Cromlin.
Got an OBE.
Yes, and there's Beatrice Cromlin there.
Well, I must say, there's room after room after room here.
This was virtually part of the last lot built, and it's the private wards. And they
were
heated. There was one person to each ward, heated with a wood fire. And we made them into a Victorian bedroom, dining room, kitchen and parlour.
Are they private rooms for landed gentry or
people who could afford to pay for
it? Oh, they paid for it extra. Mm. I like the keratin cabinet.
Oh, yes. See, recycling's nothing new.
No.
And then the dining room, we've put in the wallpaper. And here you can explain that there's all the silver to polish, there's all the laundry, there's all the starching, and so the maid was very, very useful.
So now they're examples of Victorian rooms, but before they were actual private wards.
Yes, private wards
with one person
in there. In those days, you could have a special nurse.
Yeah.
The hospital would employ somebody who would be just your personal nurse.
Wow.
Not as they say today, I'm your nurse, but this was someone who was, and it cost a little bit more.
So it was a public and a private hospital at the same time?
It was just your hospital.
And what's this, a chemist?
Well, this is called the miscellaneous room, but it really, it's emphasising our medical aspect of being a museum in a hospital.
Yes.
We have the chemist shop with all the original bottles, because nowadays they just open a packet and label it. In those days they made up their medicines and they rolled their pills and things like that.
And very ornate labels.
Oh, yes.
That was part of it.
Beautifully done.
Yes.
Then we go up to the Chamber of Horrors,
yes,
which is the dentist.
The murder house.
Have foot-powered dental drill.
Yes.
And the older he was, the slower he would pedal. And then his portable heater. But he could take that chair and the foot-powered drill out to Deepwater or Emmerville and look after everybody out there.
Yeah.
So we also have some of his early instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And the drills.
So is this from a dentist? This
was from some of the earliest dentists, mainly from Havelock Sinfield.
Yes.
And that's a picture of his daughter up there. A lot of people in Glen Innes would still remember them. But his his claim to fame was one of the ideas that when you got married, you had all your teeth taken out, so you would not cost your husband a lot of money in dental fees. And his idea was that he then put the new set of false teeth straight in.
Okay.
One thing we do not see in Glen Innes anymore is this flying fox. Now you go into a shop and you pay for something with a card.
Yes.
In those days, you had this thing called a flying fox.
Yeah.
Where you'd unscrew this, put the money in that with the docket.
Yes.
Then you'd pull this back. And that would go all the way up to the cashier, who would be up the top, put the change in and send it back again. And they reckon once a month the office boy would put a mouse in. These are the really old types of medicines, or nostrums as they might have been called, and things like pink pills for pale people, whether they did any good or not.
Yes.
But everyone took them. And then we have these old prescription books where you have the prescription or the recipe for how to make up the pills or the mixture.
You're listening to the heart of Glen Innes. Eve and I covered a wide range of topics as we walked around the museum, much too much for this program, so I focused on the hospital aspects, but there's many, many other things to see. For her musical choice, Eve requested the Friday Piper down on Grey Street by the Town Hall. So I went down and met Paul Hansen and recorded him playing his bagpipes.
It was abandoned in 1956 when they built the new hospital to the north. Well, we were very lucky. The Historical Society was formed in 1968.
Yes.
There had been a couple of societies before, and due to the great help from the Shire Councillor, Barney Brennan, and the Mayor of the time, Eric Potter,
yes,
and the Secretary of the Hospital, Archie Weir, we were allowed to get this building as at a peppercorn rent.
So it was a meeting of the minds, was it?
Absolutely. Great cooperation. We opened in 1970, and since then we've become land managers for the Crown Lands.
So getting the building was a real impetus to form the society.
Absolutely, and then the Gleninnis Show in 1968, I was in New Zealand at that stage, they asked us to put on a display. Somebody built a little slab cottage and they had a fashion parade and they were all encouraged to bring things in. So in those days you had sheds, you had attics, you had cellars,
mm-hmm,
and people brought things out from there. Now, I'd hate to start a museum now because most of it's been chucked.
And do you know how many visitors you get a year?
Round about 4,000 to 6,000.
And we're just beside a coffee table by the looks of it.
Yes, we provide morning and afternoon tea to all the visitors that come in here. It is free, but if they wish to put a small donation in, that's fine.
Excellent.
For a cold winter, it's nice to walk around with a hot cup of tea.
Great. This has been The Heart of Gleninnis, a program about the cultural and service organisations around your town and in the region. Thanks for listening.